Hey, Annette.
Yes, Shai.
It's almost Thanksgiving.
My favorite holiday.
So what are you making?
Oh, I'm making a carbo-loading extravaganza. Baked mac and cheese, candied yams, cornbread dressing, and
can
turkey.
I come?
Of course you can.
Are you making cranberry sauce?
You know it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without it. How do you make your cranberry sauce?
It comes from a can.
I love the can.
Yeah, my kids like it because you can slice off pieces of it like really, really easily. It's like a little loaf.
It's very cool. And you know those cranberries are local. They're grown right here in South Jersey.
Yeah, that's right. But lately, cranberries have been getting kind of a bad rap.
Yeah, I saw those headlines, the one from Vice that says, cranberry bogs are serving up environmental destruction.
Yeah, and here's one from Quartz. The dark and sordid history behind America's obsession with cranberries.
I think all those articles are basically about how cranberry farming could be damaging the environment.
But there's some new research finding New Jersey's industry might not be so bad. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall.
This is The Why.
WHYY science reporter Steph Yen set out to find the truth behind the headlines.
So Steph, first off, tell us about cranberry farming. Does it, I mean, what I know from Ocean Spray commercials is like a big flooded area and lots of floating cranberries.
Well, we're Ocean Spray cranberry growers.
Hey.
Now we all
How does it work exactly?
Yes, so first thing to note is that it does not always look like those Ocean Spray commercials. Cranberry bogs are not underwater all the time. They're underwater in the fall when they harvest, and that's because flooding it actually makes it easier to harvest.
So they don't grow in the water?
They don't. They grow in vines that creep low to the ground. And in the fall when they harvest, they have these machines called egg beaters that knock the berries off the vine, and then you use the water to flood the bogs, and then the berries float to the surface, and they kind of lasso all of the floaters together, and that's how they harvest.
So where are they grown?
So cranberries grow naturally all over the Pinelands. They are an obligate wetland species, meaning that anywhere there are cranberries, that is by definition a wetland.
So the Pine Barrens are a wetland?
The Pine Barrens are a stretch of 1 million acres of coastal forest in South Jersey, and there's a lot of reddish-brown water that runs through the Pine Barrens. It looks like tea.
Yeah, I went to a camp in South Jersey called Camp Dark Waters, and there was literally like a dark river running through it, and that's just what the water's like there?
Yeah, it's actually dyed from the cedar trees. That's where the reddish brown comes from. So there's a lot of water. There's actually a huge reservoir of sterile, pure water under the Pine Barrens that scientists have compared to glacial water, and cranberries love wet, boggy conditions. So if you row down any of the waterways in the Pine Barrens, you are likely to be able to even pick wild cranberries right off the riverbed. And so over time, it's become a way of life and a culture and identity that cranberry farmers are really attached to. If you go way back in the history of the Pine Barrens, you've had pretty much every, you know, local industry that's existed happen there. There's been coal, bog iron, brick, paper, glass, all of
that. All in the Pine Barrens?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, just because there's so much natural resources there in the forest. And so by the time that industry picked up and moved to other places, like parts of Pennsylvania, the ecosystem that was left was very devastated. And so the people that wanted to stay in the Pine Barrens that had been living there and considered it home, they decided to start cultivating the cranberries that grew there naturally. So a lot of the families that have been doing it have been doing it for 4, 5, or 6 generations.
Mm-hmm. So who were some of the families that that you visited?
Hello. Hi.
Hi. Hi.
I'm Steph.
Hi, I'm Bill Cutts.
Nice to meet you.
Same here. Hi, Steph. I'm Steve Lee.
Nice to meet you, Steve.
Nice to meet you.
So I went to a meeting that happens every year It's called the Twilight Cranberry Growers Meeting, which I thought was very poetic. It's named that because they meet at dusk. And I talked to four families, the Lees, the Darlingtons, the Haynes, and the Cutts. And they're all in the span of 4 to 6 generations of cranberry farming.
Mm.
Do they compete against each other?
No, it's actually totally the opposite. They learned very early on that collaboration is very important. So I talked to Bill Cutts.
That's how we survive, by helping each other and by sort of feeding off each other when it comes to ideas and developing better ways to do things.
So one thing to note is that cranberries are a small specialty crop. And so John Deere and those big agricultural companies aren't really catering to them. So if they need to design a machine or come up with a solution, they often just come up with it themselves. When I went to the Twilight meeting, the farmers were all crowded around my mic, swapping stories about which family invented what. They've really come to rely on each other for solutions to problems they encounter.
There's been innovation all around. It shouldn't be missed that Joe Darlington's father developed the Darlington fresh cranberry picking machine. I don't know the year.
1950.
But
the Darlingtons, which is one of the families that I spoke with, they invented a harvesting machine that a lot of cranberry growers around the country use. They've also collaborated on, you know, developing machines that keep swans out of the bogs.
That idea was developed by the Haynes family.
And so really they are innovators. They say, you know, we're not just farmers, we're also engineers and inventors.
When we come back,
there are some environmental concerns with cranberry farming.
This is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall. It's Thanksgiving, and my co-host Shai and I are talking to WHYY science reporter Steph Yin about New Jersey's cranberry industry and whether or not growing this holiday staple is bad for the environment. So Steph, we've also been hearing that cranberry farms might not be so good for the environment.
Yes, so cranberry farms have definitely gotten a bad rep. And for good reason, there are some environmental concerns with cranberry farming. Because the cranberries are native to North America, they have evolved alongside pests and weeds and parasites, and they grow in bogs, which, think about the environment that insects and pests and fungi love to thrive in. It's exactly that wet, boggy,
right, that wet area that cranberries thrive in.
Exactly. So if you talk to a cranberry farmer, they will say, you really need pesticides and fungicides to grow cranberries. And then when you add the fact that you're flooding bogs, often with water from local waterways, then that creates the conditions for chemicals to be dispersed into local waterways.
So are there ways, Steph, to use less of these chemicals?
Yeah, so the farmers have been experimenting with a lot of ways to reduce their chemical inputs.
With fertilizer, we do soil testing and leaf tissue testing so that we know exactly how much we need to put on. It's very targeted and very limited. It's not just, we'll just dump a whole bunch on and the more the better. It doesn't work that way.
And one big reason for that is that they understand that clean water is crucial to their operations.
Clean water is very important to us, and so we work hard to protect not only our source of water, but the quality of our water.
So they do a lot of things to make sure that their water stays clean. They actually have a rule of thumb where for every 1 acre of producing cranberry bog, they maintain 9 acres of undisturbed woodland. And they have also switched in the last 10 years to using softer pesticides. In a way, they're actually huge stewards of land in the area.
Does this type of farming have any long-term impacts?
Yeah, so I think with any kind of intensive agriculture, there's a concern that you are degrading the land in a long-term way. Maybe the land will take a long time to recover. And so that's certainly a concern with cranberry farming as well. But I did actually talk to one scientist, Ped Dineshgar.
It's one spot which is recently abandoned.
Okay.
And then we'll go to a spot that was abandoned 65 years ago.
He's an ecologist at Monmouth University, and he's been visiting abandoned cranberry bogs around the Pinelands. And what he found actually surprised him.
I feel like there is this narrative that cranberry farming is like super environmentally impactful.
Our work does not show that. And I started this with the idea that we were going to find some really scary things, but I think it's more of a testament of the Pinelands just being very resilient.
Ped said that he was expecting the land to be depleted and changed by the constant growing and flooding of the cranberry farms, but what he found was that the forest started to grow back after just 5 years, unraveling back into this wild ecosystem.
So is that concern a little bit overblown, that they're concerned about overfarming?
He says that we should be cautiously optimistic. This may be very specific to the Pine Barrens. So the Pine Barrens are this very unique ecosystem. Ped says we shouldn't apply the results from the Pine Barrens to other places in the country where cranberries are grown, like Wisconsin, the Pacific Northwest, and Massachusetts.
Do you think that your research would apply to abandoned cranberry bogs elsewhere? Or is this, do you think that the Pinelands are just...
I think it's the Pinelands. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to draw conclusions about other places. If they're growing cranberries in other places that are similar in ecology to this, then maybe. But Pinelands are just really resilient.
What that means is that this land in particular is used to surviving and bouncing back from some very harsh and turbulent conditions.
So did Ped talk about why the Pinelands seem to be so resilient after all these years and all this damage?
Yeah, it really has to do with, you know, over hundreds of years, the Pinelands evolved with fire and flood.
Pinelands are an interesting system. They're very highly evolved to very harsh conditions. The soils here are very acidic. There's a lot of endemic species to the Pinelands that are only found here and nowhere else in the world. And this system is used to being burned naturally because we're close to the coast, used to having a lot of coastal pressure. So I think they're just used to a lot of disturbance and stress.
It's
so
just hardcore.
Yeah, they're all tough, you know.
So the Pine Barrens are this really tough and punk rock ecosystem. They can just handle so much stress.
So what you're saying is that what we're about to put on our tables is not only local, but it's also a little bit hardcore.
It's totally hardcore.
Hardcore cranberries.
Rock on, cranberries. Yeah. Thank you, Steph. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Steph Yin is a science reporter for WHYY. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Our intern is Jade Chandler. Tweet me at Shai Ben-Yaakov. Happy Thanksgiving.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody.